Hello, I'm Georgina Robinson.
And I'm Tom Deason.
Welcome to the Rugby World Cup Daily. Coming to you from Japan every day throughout the 2019 Rugby World Cup.
Hello, rugby lovers from all over the globe. Welcome to our podcast for another episode. My name is Tom Deason from the Sydney Morning Herald. I'm joined by
Georgina Robinson,
our chief rugby reporter on the ground in Tokyo. I am back from a little mission down to Toyota to watch Wales versus Georgia. It's Tuesday evening here. Yet again, another newsworthy day in the world of rugby.
It's all happening, Tommy.
It's been a World Rugby statement tonight, G, talking about the referees, the poor referees. What have they had to say about some of the referees on show thus far in this tournament?
Well, I'll give you the facts first. They put out a statement tonight saying basically an apology for inconsistent or, sorry, match officiating that hasn't been up to standard in the opening round. Now, upon second reading, it seems to blame technology and communication between the television match official and the on-field team. Maybe there's a bit of a lost in translation inference there, that there's just been some technological stuff that hasn't been up to scratch. What I actually read from it is that this is all about Argentina and France. We've written in the Cauliflower at the Cup column that'll be in Wednesday's paper that Mario Ledesma had a real crack at Australia's own Angus Gardner for refereeing the match like a small nation, or refereeing Argentina like a small nation.
It translated, we felt we were hard done by.
And then there was this really interesting, so he had a red-hot crack, and then today it drops that Ledesma's apologised. He's eating humble pie. He says, you know, he apologised to Angus Gardner, the Australian we all know, Mario Ledesma, the former Wallabies and Waratah scrum coach, has spent a lot of time in Australia. No hard feelings. But then, sure enough, that was at some point on Tuesday, and then late on Tuesday, it feels a little bit like a quid pro quo. Mario Ledesma sends out an apology, and then all of a sudden World Rugby send out an apology. And knowing what I know about how the business of World Rugby works, I actually think, my theory is that the referees have been blowing up at World Rugby about the gear they're given to work with not being up to scratch. You know, that they've been hung out to dry, because we know that the first round has been dominated by controversy. Ben O'Keefe smashed for his officiating of Australia-Fiji. Gardner smashed for his officiating of Argentina-France. So much controversy about South Africa-New Zealand. And I actually think the refs have gotten together and say, hey, we don't really enjoy copying this. We're doing our best. And I think there's a little bit of a problem. And that's why I think technology was mentioned. I think World Rugby has kind of gone into bat for its referees, or has been put on notice perhaps by the referees to say, you're not giving us the right gear to work with. I think there've been a few technical issues. That's my read. I have to put a purely speculation kind of a bracket around that, but I think that's probably what's happening.
I think in comparison, though, Sanzar vehemently, not defend, but they wouldn't. I'd be surprised if someone like Sanzar would put out a statement of their referees. They're very protective of them. I can't imagine the referees would be too thrilled about that statement, or with saying that things haven't been as consistent as they would have liked. Maybe behind the scenes, World Rugby are filthy at the officiating, and that's just one way to perhaps sort of drop the hint that maybe they aren't happy and, you know, sugarcoat it a little bit and blame technology. But look, nonetheless, the microscope is on. We knew it would be. And regardless of what happens, the officiating has come under the microscope, and will, you know, for the next however long this tournament goes, obviously.
Yeah, I think for the Australian market and for our listeners and readers, Tommy, I think it's probably important to point out that a World Rugby source told us that this in no way, shape or form was referencing the Reece Hodge citation. There was definitely an intent to clarify that there was no problem with the fact that Reece Hodge was cited after the fact. So that's really interesting, and that probably is a nice segue into the other hot topic. It's, you know, we'll have to wait until probably late Wednesday. I don't anticipate us being able to record this version of the podcast on Wednesday until quite late at night. Sorry to the producer, Dave, because the way these things go, the hearing's at 4 p.m. AEST, and we'll probably be going quite late into the night on it. What's your gut on how that's going to pan out? Australia is obviously going in there to challenge Reece Hodge's citation and argue that it didn't meet the red card threshold at all. What do you reckon?
Genuinely think it's a flip of a coin at the moment. Australia will be going in there all guns blazing. They'll have tapes, footage, lawyered up with their viewpoint and what they think. And, you know, they'll probably point to some other instances. There was an incident just before in the Samoa-Russia game which perhaps might be taken in there by the Australians, and they'll just be looking to offload the blame. Not offload the blame, but spread the blame, you know, to say that Reece's tackle on Yato didn't meet that red card threshold. I think they may have a reasonable case. You could argue that he did try and wrap his arms, but as Warren Gatland, when I asked him at the press conference on Monday night after their game against Georgia, you know, had a little grin on his face and said that he felt there was contact made, you know, obviously with the head. So
Warren Gatland's always got a little grin on his face in test weeks.
He does. And he didn't try and weigh in on it, but by saying that, he has weighed in on it, you know. the judiciary has to make their call, but I do think he made contact. So he already has weighed in with that. I mean, it was interesting, John McKee on the eve of this hearing, the Fijian coach who...
War of words.
Yeah, obviously Michael Checker came out and said he didn't think that it was in the spirit of rugby that John McKee and other Fijian types would say to his face that it's all good as gold, wallaby gold, and go behind their back and refer the matter to World Rugby.
What do you
rugby.
Make of that?
I don't think Fiji need to do that. I don't think they need to go up to Michael after the game and say, oh, this is what we're thinking and let's talk about the tackle face-to-face, because we know what Michael Checker thinks. He's going to talk it down. He's going to try and convince them otherwise. And why wouldn't he? He's the Australian coach. He wants Reece Hodge to play the next game. I mean, they could have maybe sent him a message before that if you want to play along those lines, but I don't think they necessarily need to. And quite
maybe
frankly,
it was a decision they made after the fact.
Maybe you don't know the context. And,
maybe
and
they
we
sit
don't
there,
know.
Get on the bus, and go, you know what? That was BS.
Mm.
Let's put these people on notice. Because from Fiji's perspective, it was their opportunity. It was their best opportunity, and probably their only opportunity. They needed to knock off Australia to advance to the quarterfinals. Something they haven't done, and with that game gone, and as McKee said on Tuesday, not only that game gone, but their best player ruled out for Wednesday's game, and we're talking a 4-day turnaround for this Tier 2 nation that had every single one of its players in that top 15, in that starting 15, off island, playing spread all over the world. Maybe that's fair enough. Maybe they've got nothing to lose. Time will tell, I guess.
Wednesday evening, stay tuned to Rugby Heaven. We'll have all the latest on the Hodge decision. As we said, we expect it to go deep into the night, but look, it'll give some clarity around the Wallabies, and then they can pick their team from that. Usually they do have a selection meeting on a Tuesday night. Given the test is on a Sunday, that will be moved back to Wednesday night, and therefore after the Hodge incident, so they may even have to reconvene on Thursday our time to have a chat about the
or
team.
They'll have a plan A and a plan B.
True.
Maybe. The other interesting thing I liked, and you know, it's just caution when coaches after matches start talking about referees and officiating. And I have a lot of sympathy for people whose livelihoods and careers are staked on the vision and the communication and the technology between a group of referees. I have a lot of sympathy for that. But, you know, Michael Checker came in on Monday and talked about in the context of the Hodge citation that, you know, one of the disappointing things was he really felt for the referees because they'd been overruled. Their on-field decisions and their professionalism had been, in effect, he was saying, undermined by the siding commissioner, John Montgomery from Scotland, citing Hodge. And I find that a little bit hard to stomach or take on face value when immediately after the game, Checker himself came in and singled out those same referees, just doing their best in quotes, for targeting David Pocock from the get-go. And we all jumped on that as soon as it happened. So, you know, in the space of 24 hours, he's gone from criticising the referees for targeting his star player to then going into bat for them. So I just think, you know, it's kind of reader beware when you're dealing with coaches' opinions on referees, and also with World Rugby's comments about referees. I mean, when I read that alert tonight, all I thought about was Craig Joubert, the South African referee, who after the Australia-Scotland quarterfinal had bottles pelted at him and you know, was lambasted in the Northern Hemisphere for his calls in that game that essentially gave Australia the win and ended Scotland's campaign. And then to not only have to endure that, World Rugby then comes out and says, under, you know, after fierce public pressure, yes, Craig Joubert got it wrong. I mean, you're then throwing your man under the bus. So It's a really fraught issue, and whenever I hear a coach comment on officiating, and whenever I see World Rugby come out and make a statement about officiating, I don't know. I just strap in and get a box of popcorn and watch it all play out. And you know what else I hate? Another. Let's just make this the Georgina Robinson.
That's why you're on the big bear. Bucks.
That's why I'm on the big bucks, Tommy. That's why the beers are my shout later on. I hate the clip-a-thon. I hate the on social media, well, I'll see your clip of this breakdown atrocity and raise you this clip of this offside atrocity. I hate that.
Boring.
Boring and ineffective and irrelevant when we've got one case in question. It doesn't affect the merits of the particular case. Anyway, is there anything else going on at this World Cup, Tom?
Oh, it's probably time for another podcast to discuss all that. But look, yeah, the big game, obviously Australia-Wales. Happy to be back in Tokyo. I made a quick little dash down to Toyota City. Had a few dramas there after the Wales-Georgia game trying to find accommodation.
I did my best.
You did. I was going to crash on the couch of Simon Cron, the ex-Waratahs coach, assistant coach. Managed to find somewhere in Nagoya. There was a media bus actually going back into town, which was quite handy. So booking accommodation on the bus, as you do, filed late and managed to get the bullet train back up here.
You end up in a capsule hotel?
I was looking for a capsule, believe it or not, but I managed to just find a little cheap $50 motel for the night. Got in there about 1 o'clock, did a bit of work, and then managed to get the bullet train back up. Passed Mount Fuji on the way home, which was quite a sight. Managed to get some Instagram fodder. To keep the punters happy, to, you know, show the beautiful...
Your mum.
Yeah, my mum, my grandmother. Well, she just doesn't have Instagram. But, yeah, it was a nice trip back. Happy to be back in Tokyo ahead of the big game. You were at a press conference today where Jordy Pitea, the boom rookie of the Wallaby squad, talked about...
The boom rookie we've never seen. I feel so sorry for the bloke who has to front media conferences and talk for another day about how he hasn't played any footy yet, but he's trying really hard to get back. You know, your heart just breaks for those guys who's there, you know, and he's this like hulking sort of 7 foot tall, massive power, and he hasn't played any footy and has to keep talking about it. It's really hard. But we did actually get him going on Wally. So Wally is the Wallabies team mascot, and it's a rite of passage. The youngest Wallaby on every tour is responsible, is Wally's guardian, has to carry them around on their person at all times. And Geordie told some very embarrassing stories. It basically revealed him to be one of the worst guardians of the poor stuffed animal in the history of Wallabies. And as far as my exhaustive search this evening has gone, I've been able to determine that Jason Little carried around Wally, a stuffed wallaby, as early as 1989 on a tour.
Wow.
My recent story on the 99 World Cup showed Scott Staniforth carrying around a really large brown wallaby that was kind of like almost like a life-sized one. So Geordie Patea has it easy, but has lost it a couple of times, including when I flew over to New Zealand with the team. I was sitting in the aisle, and all of a sudden the stewardess over the loudspeaker said, "Look, someone lost a small wallaby in a wallaby's jersey," and Jordan Patea had to put up his hand and, you know, blushed. That was pretty humiliating. But Willie Genia, who was also at the press conference, told us that actually James O'Connor was the worst abuser of wallaby. And, you know, we didn't ask any further questions because we all know about James O'Connor's dark days. And we started to think the kind of spa baths and, I don't know, Hungry Jack's outlets that Wally was taken into.
Wally was at Hungry Jack's that night. Who knows? Imagine if someone over here managed to pinch Wally. That would be the souvenir of the World Cup, potentially for a travelling Aussie rugby fan.
Is that a challenge to
I'm not sure. We would never encourage anyone stealing Australian team paraphernalia. But look, you know, Geordie has to hang on to Wally for a while until some other young punk comes along and takes his place, even though Geordie hasn't played a test yet. But he's still, he said today he's maybe right for the Uruguay game. That's the game that they're looking at, him being eligible for selection. Whether they play him or not is one thing. And that might be actually dependent on how they go against Wales on Sunday.
Exactly. And actually, from his demeanour, I think he knows exactly when he's right and if he will be right at all this World Cup, but isn't quite sure about what he can and can't say. I think everyone knows where he's at inside the team, and, you know, that's just something we'll have to wait and see with. I think that's about it, is it, Tommy?
Yeah, we might go fix up this bill. We're just standing on the street as the garbage trucks go past of Tokyo. So thanks for listening, types. We'll be back tomorrow. We're going to have the podcast a little later on Wednesday evening, local time, to get in the Rhys Hodge verdict and dissect all of that. Whilst we won't be in the room, we'll be doing our best to find out the cases for and against. And as always, Rugby Heaven will be filled with copy for your eyes and however you obviously want to consume those words.
Beautifully delivered, Tom Deason. That's it from us for now, and we'll talk to you all on Wednesday night. Cheers.
Sayonara.